Ding dong, ding dong, ding dong, ding. CKUT 90.3. Take it from me. It's the best, beats the rest. 90.3 CKUT.
Montreal. You are tuned to the Wednesday Morning After on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. We have a tight show for you today with two arts and culture interviews and an interview from the Music Spot. Today's first interview is with Cindy Milstein, editor of There Is Nothing So Whole as a Broken Heart. A Jewish queer anarchist, Cindy Milstein explains culture and society in today's world. The second interview is with Jacob Wren, author of A User's Guide to Authenticity as a Feeling. We'll hear more from Jacob later in the show. Finally, we'll interview Andrew of the Civil Union. This husband and wife duo is rocking the house down with their incredibly styled lyrics and synthopop beats. 8 a.m. brings Democracy Now!, 8:15 brings weather, and we'll wrap up the show. Let's start the day off with some music.
Windows. A little listless, it tends to be this way. Shuffle and so, so heavy undertow. Since there's no point, it's best to let it go.
Shadows growing low, stuck on this track. Sun is behind, is there no turning back? Rather than it seems, the road to relief. When there's nothing to hold you up but relief.
Say if you wanna play with your troubles, either way life will go on. Say if you wanna laughter of sweet daughters, nothing lost tomorrow.
And I don't wanna leave. Seems unimportant, going after dreams. When suddenly life comes apart at the seams.
Tell me what's the point of living?
Vaccination against COVID-19 is now underway for priority groups. Visit quebec.ca/COVID-vaccine to follow the vaccination sequence planned for your area and book your appointment online. If necessary, you can also call 1-877-644-4545. Once you've been vaccinated, it's important to continue to protect yourself by following the basic health guidelines. The vaccine, a safe way to protect ourselves. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Through stories at once poetic and poignant, There Is Nothing So Whole as a Broken Heart offers a powerful elixir for all who rebel against systemic violence and injustice. The contemporary renewal of Jewish anarchism draws on a history of suffering ranging from enslavement and displacement to white nationalism and genocide. With us today, we have Cindy Milstein, editor of There Is Nothing So Whole as a Broken Heart. Hi, Cindy, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Sheila. Thanks so much for having me and to CKUT.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be involved in Jewish queer anarchism.
Yeah, I've long been engaged in anarchist collectives, spaces, organizing, and social movements, including I was in Montreal for much of the student strike time period and helped with the Montreal Anarchist Book Fair. I also am a writer and an editor, including books from anarchism and its aspirations to anthologies called Rebellious Morning, Deciding for Ourselves, and now the latest one, There's Nothing So Whole as a Broken Heart. And I'm Jewish, I'm queer, and I'm anarchist. So yeah, I think those just are part of who I am and what I do.
35 essays and 10 works of art. How did you choose your artists and authors for this book?
Yeah, about 2.5 years ago, I put out a call for people to submit pieces. I got about 2 to 3 times as many pieces as I could use. That call really helped me shape sort of the focus of the anthology. I think of anthologies as sort of musical compositions or curating an exhibit space or container it helped me shape it around. The first section is on remembrance or loss, grief, and trauma. Then there's a section in the middle of art about resilience, and it moves into resistance as repair and joy and all the kind of cultural flourishing of Jewish anarchism right now. So yeah, and then after the call, I also then reached out to fill in what I wanted that to look like by contacting specific people that I knew were doing really remarkable projects or doing things that I thought would make compelling stories, and weave those together into what I hope is a pretty powerful, moving snapshot or sampler of what Jewish anarchism looks like right now.
How does ancestral resistance influence our modern Jewish anarchism?
Yeah, well, there's a lengthy tradition within Judaism of resistance, sort of baked into Judaism, I would say, through its stories and teaching and historical experiences. Thousands of years of being a diasporic people has created a really long legacy of how to survive and thrive outside of empires and states, you know, in the face of dispossession or displacement or genocide or all sorts of other things, but also how to keep a community together. So that's sort of just pretty profound tradition within Judaism. But specifically, I can't go into it here, but there's also a lot of elements within Judaism that could lead one toward being a radical of all sorts. So there's a long, like, beautiful legacy of Jewish radicals in all sorts of movements, especially contemporary, from feminism to civil rights to labor movements to queer liberation, Palestinian solidarity. And then in anarchism, there's the one anarchist most people know is Emma Goldman, who was Jewish, up through someone who I was friends with, Murray Bookchin. So there's a long tradition of anarchists also being Jewish, heavily, heavily Jewish. Anarchism has heavily included a lot of Jews, including one of the longest lasting newspapers on Turtle Island that was a Yiddish Jewish anarchist newspaper called the Free Voices of Labor. I think it was the biggest and longest lasting Jewish anarchist periodical, actually.
Where is the strength in your identity as Jewish and queer and an anarchist?
Yeah, I feel like all three bring different elements, but are very complementary. They all offer a sort of an ethical lens, but also a rich tradition of practices and tools to self-determine and self-organize in the here and now. I feel like they're all they all offer a living, breathing sense of what a lot of Jews strive for in the here and now, which is trying to create spaces of what the world we want to come, or worlds at cross purposes with everything that we want to see dismantled, from white Christian male supremacy and capitalism and colonialism to heteronormativity and hierarchies of all sorts. But they all also bring what's even more beautiful is they supply prefigurative forms or forms in the here and now of how we can already begin to live out collective care, solidarity, community, you know, dignity, all mutualistic forms outside of domination and hierarchy that are about life, you know, determining our own lives together and practicing them together.
Would you like to read us 4 minutes of your work, There Is Nothing So Whole as a Broken Heart?
Sure. Yeah, thanks. I'm going to just open my book here. So maybe this is from the prologue to the book, which is called Shadows and Moonlight. So I'll just start reading. It actually is a sort of preface to reading. In part of the prologue, I was just talking about what it was like to finish an anthology in the midst of a pandemic. How does one return from the dead, from the feeling each morning on waking that one shouldn't still be here, when one's bones cry out with the weary pain of ancestors who already said no to fascism and yet were burned by its fires? How does one grieve in any way, ways that make one feel whole again, ways that honor the sacredness of life, the mounting ash heap of losses these many months, a pandemic, when one's rituals cry out for communities of beloveds holding each other close, looking into each other's eyes, reciprocally catching the subtleties of how our minds and bodies are reacting while we light candles or sing poignant tunes or recite ancient prayers for the departed, face, to unmediated face. One looks backward into the flames that have engulfed too many peoples, yours included, over too many centuries, into the repeated sparks of resistance and somehow survival, although always at a brutal cost, into traditions that have mutually aided many people to bear the unbearable and still find space to make one want to live, even if the world is dying. In a few days, Jews will mark Tisha B'Av, a major day of communal mourning, the culmination of 3 weeks and especially 9 days of mourning in preparation for what many understand as the saddest day of the year. The reasons for this specific date and asking that people share the crush of grief can be and are debated among Jews. Yet 1 year's Tisha B'Av sticks out in particular, 1492. That Tisha B'Av was the last day of Jews being expelled from Spain, thrown into diaspora, suffering, and or death again during the Inquisition. The harbor was apparently so congested that fascistic day in 1492 that Columbus had to delay his voyage to colonize and kill indigenous peoples. That same period saw the targeting of Muslims too, witch hunts against women and queers, and the start of the slave trade of Black people. How does one return from the dead? After Jews sit Shiva, the 7 days of communal mourning following a death, many communities include informal practices, such as walking around the block together to help them reemerge side by side into the world with its joys and its sorrows. Our ancestors, in their many times of diaspora and despair, have invented rituals precisely to bravely, communally withstand and defy catastrophes, even if as messages in bottles, in hopes they'd reach those of us who will outlast them. We can't return to that pivotal year, 1492, and undo the barbarous theft of land and lives that followed. And yet we must return to that time, now over 500 years ago, so as to remember that millions of us were scattered into disposability during the exact same epoch. We share in this trauma, which cunningly took even the memory of our intermingled lives and solidarities, that coldly pitted us against each other in a fight for scraps, in hierarchies of oppression, as if pain were a contest. If we pull back the mists of time, we see that as peoples dispersed against our wills, Jews and non-Jews alike, we share playbooks not only for survival, but also resilience.
How does this work serve to change the Jewish culture so set in its ways and traditions?
Yeah, I'd actually say Jewish culture isn't set in its ways and traditions, it's actually a very dynamic culture. Judaism itself is structured to be dynamic. It's all of its ideas are intended to continually be studied, wrestled with, debated, reinterpreted, and transformed for different places, times, and contexts, which is very vibrant. But that said, the new Jewish anarchism is distinct. It's not just adamantly anti-Zionist, but it's anti-statist in general. But beyond that, it also has I think because of what's happening contemporarily, a really strong emphasis on anti-racism and anti-fascism, including anti-Semitism. And it's bringing Jewishness into anarchism in terms of our organizing and direct actions, which prior, oftentimes anarchists left their Judaism behind. We bring it right into it. It's also really beautifully queered, trans, and feminist. That's a really strong element in contemporary Jewish anarchism. And the other two components I think really define it are a do-it-ourselves spirituality outside of hierarchical, patriarchal structures, outside organized, institutionalized religion. The spirituality is really key. The last piece that I think is pretty distinct about contemporary Jewish anarchism is that it's strongly anti-assimilationist. Many of our parents and grandparents tried to assimilate out of fear to protect themselves, but that hasn't worked. And so I think what's beautiful is this anti-assimilation is a positive thing. It's this kind of loud, proud, beautiful coming out as Jewish anarchists. And there's this incredible flowering of what it means to be Jewish right now in terms of art and music, everything from drag performance to theater to redoing the Jewish calendar, which is different from the calendar that most people use, and holidays and rituals, all within an anarchistic lens.
What does an anarchist do that frees others and themselves?
Yeah, anarchism sort of by almost definition is understands that the only way we can be free is to free ourselves, that no one can free someone else. That's still a form of, you know, imposition. For me, I like to look at the aspirations of anarchism. And to my mind, at the core is this ongoing process of us balancing what it means to be an ever freer people in ever freer societies. And that's there's always a beautiful tension in that. I like to call it messy beauty of what it means, you know, to balance my own freedom against a social freedom. And then it's really a practice in the here and now of carving out spaces of self-determination, self-organization, and self-governance that look different from the world that doesn't allow us to decide for ourselves, which is the anthology I put out before this has all these really beautiful stories of long-lasting or large-scale spaces of people determining their own lives in anarchistic ways. And there's many examples right now. And in one of them, I really love it. They talk about how it's still hard. It's still difficult. It's still always going to be a process. Freedom isn't a fixed point. But this person talks about how it qualitatively feels different to walk around this one space in this one story. They said they could almost smell freedom in the air. That really stuck with me. So yeah, so it's the idea that that everybody deserves to be fully themselves in a fully egalitarian, reciprocal, mutualistic world.
How are you celebrating the release of this book?
Yeah, sadly, it's bittersweet. If there weren't a pandemic, I would usually celebrate by wandering all over the place to do beautiful in-person events and spaces and create space for ritual and food and conversation and celebrating the book in real. It's meant to be a living, breathing, opening up storytelling. But in lieu of that, I really want to thank Independent Jewish Voices of Canada. They did a book launch with I was part of a couple of weeks ago, and it's recorded. If you go to their website or other social media, you can find a recording of that event. And if listeners right now are interested in finding out more about or joining in anarchistic Jewish events or connecting with other people, I would encourage them to also look at Independent Jewish Voices Canada, abbreviated IJV Canada. There also have been a few other book launches on Firestorm Books and Burning Books, which are also both recorded. And I'm doing a few podcasts with some lovely podcast shows called Coffee with Comrades and The Final Straw. So yeah, unfortunately, most of it's either audio or audio visual right now. And I would also just encourage people, if they want to like think about more about Jewish anarchism, to you know, get a copy of the book or several copies and do storytelling and reading groups together. And, you know, the book really encourages others to tell their stories too. It's full of poems and essays and fairy tales and art and all sorts of ways that encourage others to share and interpret their stories together.
If our listeners wish to buy your book, where should they go?
Hey, you can either go to AK Press, which is the publisher, or in so-called Canada, you can get it through www.leftwingbooks.net and save on shipping. Or I really encourage people also to, you know, go to or order from your favorite independent or radical or feminist bookstore to keep them afloat, especially during this really difficult collective trauma of the pandemic.
Thank you for your interview today.
Thank you so much for having me here.
You've been listening to Cindy Milstein speaking about her book, There Is Nothing So Whole as a Broken Heart, and Jewish Queer Anarchism. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
Early in the morning, before the sun rose, when the first bird sang, even while everyone was still asleep.
Morning. On that morning.
When the sun.
Cock-a-doodle-doo. I hear the rooster crowing.
Now you must wake up.
Now every morning when I wake up,
I woke up this morning with
the kiss of the morning.
Got up 7:30 every morning. Had the same breakfast.
Réveillez-moi à 8 heures demain matin.
Good morning.
Say in the morning.
Bacon and eggs.
In the morning.
In the morning.
In the morning.
Why should the sun replace the moonlight?
Has this ever happened to any of you?
or will it happen to any of you on the morning after the night before?
You are listening to The Morning After on CKUT 90.3 on the FM dial.
Currently, Jacob Wren is offering media performances of his latest work, A User's Guide to Authenticity is a Feeling, by Jacob Wren and PME Art. With us today, we have Jacob Wren. Hi, Jacob, and welcome to the show.
Hello, thanks for having me.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be both an author and a performance artist.
Yeah, so my name is Jacob Wren, making work very young when I was a teenager in Toronto. I started publishing in literary periodicals around 17, 18, and made my first shows around the same time. And I don't know exactly why I thought I could. I was untrained. I just had a kind of punk rock, do-it-yourself, we can do this kind of feeling. And right at the beginning, I got a lot of attention in a way for being like the world's youngest artist, that kind of vibe. And later it got a bit more difficult.
What is the work Authenticity is a Feeling, and why do we need a user's guide?
Authenticity is a Feeling is a book I wrote in 2018 to celebrate the 20th anniversary of the interdisciplinary performance group, PME Art. I felt there was we wanted to do something to celebrate our 20th anniversary, and we didn't want to do any of the normal things. So somebody made a joke that maybe I could write a novel about PME Art. And out of that joke came Authenticity is a Feeling. Because it's a book about performance, A User's Guide to Authenticity is a Feeling is a performance about the book and about the first 20 years of PME Art. And we thought it was important not just to do a book, but also to do a performance, since PME Art is always about performance.
What was inauthentic in your life, and what inspired you to feel authenticity?
I mean, I don't know. There's lots of things inauthentic in my life, but specifically what I was thinking about in the title, Authenticity is a Feeling, was that when I was a teenager, I went to see theater in Toronto. It kind of opened up a desire in me for something that felt live and in the moment and present. Most of the theater I saw was the opposite of that. It created in me a desire to kind of try and create a theater that felt more authentic to me, that felt more like it was happening right now. And that's one of the things we've been trying to do at PME Art for the past 20 plus years.
What other art forms do you use to express yourself, and why did you choose theater for this work?
I mean, I do a lot of different things. And sometimes, you know, I write novels too. And sometimes I say I do in my performances what I can't do in my books, and I do in my books what I can't do in my performances. This is a work about the first 20 years of PME Art. So PME Art is a company that makes performances. We spend a lot of time touring them and doing them in Europe and in Japan. And therefore, to try and kind of give this feeling of what we've been doing for the past 20 plus years, it felt it needed to be something on stage.
What universal themes do you touch on in A User's Guide to Authenticity as a Feeling?
I mean, all of the work that we do at PME Art is about being yourself in a performance situation, about the kind of vulnerability and paradox of being yourself in a performance situation. So when I'm on stage trying to be myself, I'm trying to talk the same way to the audience that maybe I would talk to a friend if we're meeting for coffee. But there's a kind of paradox to that, because the situation is nerve-wracking. There's a bunch of people sitting there staring at me. It's not a normal situation. So I'm trying to kind of create a kind of normal feeling of speaking and being in this situation that's not normal at all. Be a situation that's not suited for it. So these ideas of like being yourself, do you have a self? What does it mean to be yourself? I think these are questions that are part of all of our lives, maybe.
What is the plot of the play?
It's funny for me to hear it called a play. I would never call it that myself. I would call it a performance lecture. And, you know, I started as a playwright, and the work I do now is kind of a direct reaction against being a playwright. So I can't stand the idea of putting words in someone else's mouth. If I work with people collaboratively, I want everyone to speak for themselves and say things they believe in. So yeah, in A User's Guide to Authenticity as a Feeling, I try and tell the story of PME art starting in 2016 when I met Sylvie Lachance and Richard Ducharme, and they invited me to come to Montreal and begin working with them. Had this, in a way, quite difficult process at the beginning of trying to bring Anglophones and Francophones together with our different styles and different ideas of what performance is. And then it goes on, you know, to tell the story about some of the shows we made and an enormous amount of touring. I've made the joke that the book is a kind of a Spinal Tap for interdisciplinary performance. And yeah, it just kind of keeps telling the story of how the difficulty of collaboration and how we've struggled to keep working together over the past 20 plus years.
Why A User's Guide to Authenticity is a Feeling at this time in history?
I mean, the book and the show were made for the 20th anniversary of PME Art 2018. It's maybe not so much about this time in history, but about this time in the progression of PME Art. It's quite hard to hold an interdisciplinary group together for 20 years. And I didn't just want to let the moment pass by. I thought what we do is quite unusual. And there was some, and also I felt the only people who know kind of what's happened to us are me, Sylvie, and Richard. So I felt somehow there was some value in letting other people in on the secret, letting other people see the behind the scenes world of what we do and who we are.
What is the message you wish to leave with the audience from this performance art?
I don't know. I mean, you know, it's me talking about the history of PME art. I don't know what the message could be. I think, you know, it's so much about a kind of stubbornness and tenacity of trying to keep something going and having a vision of art that maybe you don't see other people following so much and wanting to see a kind of art in the world that you don't see. But it's also about trying to mix that tenacity and stubbornness with a kind of absolute openness and trying to be changed by the experiences you have. And I mean, so many of the experiences we had were touring and meeting the work, meeting new contexts and new people. So maybe something, it's about how being an artist can be such a important mix of stubbornness and openness.
Where and when is this being performed?
A User's Guide to Authenticity as a Feeling will be at La Chapelle on May 17th and 18th at 6:30 p.m.
If our listeners want to acquire tickets, where should they go?
I believe the show is completely sold out, so it might be a bit hard to get tickets. Because of COVID, there's extremely limited seating, but you can call La Chapelle or go to the La Chapelle website, and maybe there'll be an opening. I hope you get in.
Thank you for your interview today.
Thanks so much for having me.
You've been listening to Jacob Wren speaking about A User's Guide to Authenticity is a Feeling. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
The alert level in your region or a neighboring region is red. To curb the spread of COVID-19, gatherings with family and friends in private homes and yards are prohibited. Travel between regions should be avoided, and traveling to yellow zones is forbidden. It's forbidden to leave your home between 9:30 p.m. and 5 a.m. Visit quebec.ca/coronavirus to learn more about the other measures in place. Follow all the rules, all the time, no exceptions. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Though their moniker may bring up images and sounds of country folk bluegrass twang, the Civil Union sound actually lives in an energetic dream popscape containing lush choruses, spirited synth interludes, and pleasing reverb-soaked vocals. With us today, we have Andrew from the Civil Union. Hi, Andrew, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Sheila. Thanks for having me.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be involved with the Civil Union.
Sure. My name is Andrew, and the Civil Union is actually a project between my wife, Naomi, and I. We are sort of both independently creative. She has a garden design business and is a textile artist. And I was a solo singer-songwriter for a lot of years in Edmonton. So we jokingly, you know, say that we had a midlife crisis and decided to start a band. And so that's kind of what the Civil Union is really just a project for the two of us to be creative together.
You've recently released a single called Dominoes. What is the story behind this song?
Yeah, that song kind of came out of nowhere. We were cooking supper together as a family, and somebody, you know, offhand mentioned, and it's falling like dominoes, and we thought, oh, that's a neat sort of lyrical hook. So the song came together quite quickly. We wrote it and recorded it in a couple of days, and really it's about, you know, falling into doing something with somebody that you love, somebody that you care about.
May we hear some of your music?
Yes, of course.
This is Dominoes on the Wednesday Morning After.
This feeling like there's no one left to go but you. Across my face, I really wish they.
You've had an album in the past. What is it called and how were you inspired to write it?
So our debut album was just a self-titled album. We put together sort of pre-COVID. It really was just sort of a collection of songs that we had written together. Initially, we had started with an idea of doing a concept album. It was just a way to sort of give us content to write about, give us a bit of focus. And so the album itself doesn't really, now as it stands, isn't really a concept album any longer, kind of started that way. So we decided, made the wonderful decision to release it just as the pandemic was getting going. So it's been an interesting year for sure.
What is the process you go through when you produce an album?
Yeah, I think similar for, you know, as I was mentioning with Dominoes, it'll start, you know, with a random idea. So either, you know, a lyrical hook or a musical idea, you know, I'll sing something into my phone or something like that. And that'll kind of start as a jumping off point. And then typically I'll put some of the musical ideas down, the bed of the song down. And then Naomi will handle the lyrics and put her efforts there. And then we sort of, once the lyrics are there, the song sort of structure is there, then it's really a collaborative process to kind of, you know, fine tune the song and decide how we want to produce it, what instruments we want to be on, the structure of the song, all those types of things.
Maybe hear some more of your music?
Yes.
This is Runaway on CKUT.
We don't belong.
plans musically over the next year?
Well, I think our plans, like most bands, you know, COVID willing, are to get out and actually play live again. We've been a band for a couple of years now and have yet to play live, really, other than, you know, for friends and family because of the pandemic. So hopefully we can start to do that, you know, share our music in person with people. You know, and beyond that, because we sort of write and record at home, we're always doing that. We're always writing and recording something. So certainly our plan is to release more music as well throughout the year.
If our listeners want some free listening time or to buy your music, where should they go?
The easiest place is our website. It's thecivilunion.ca. It's kind of the central hub for everything the Civil Union. As well, we're on all major streaming platforms and social media platforms at the Civil Union. That's probably the easiest way to find us, but the website certainly has links to all of our music and those types of things.
So thank you for your interview today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You have been listening to Andrew speaking about the Civil Union. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
For every rock, there's a stepping stone, one that takes you further than before. And I can go your way, but I'll go my way too. And when this world finally comes to an end, I will be right there beside you, remembering all the words you said. Like, take it day by day, my friend. Take it day by day, my friend. Day by day, my friend. For every seed, there's a growing tree. One's growing taller than before. And I'll just sit underneath. I'll watch those trees get high. And when this world finally comes to an end, I will be right there beside you, remembering all the words you said. When this world finally comes to an end, I'll be right there, right there, beside you. Thank you.
You're listening to the Wednesday Morning After Show with your host, Sheila Ferrando, on CKUT 90.3 FM, Montreal, or worldwide at ckut.ca.
Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israeli airstrikes have killed at least 26 Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, including 9 children, as tension in the region has escalated sharply over the past day. In one incident, 7 members of a single family in Gaza were killed, including 3 children.
What happened here is we were sitting outside the house waiting for iftar, the breaking of the fast. An 8-month-old child was killed. Muhammad, who's getting married in 5 days after Eid, was killed. How is this the children's fault? Girls between the ages of 7 and 9 have been killed. How is this their fault? We are just sitting outside the house waiting for the call to prayer.
The attacks came after 700 Palestinians were injured in Jerusalem and the West Bank by Israeli security forces Monday, including a violent crackdown inside the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem, the third holiest site in Islam. Hamas responded by firing hundreds of rockets into Israel. No deaths were reported, but police said over 24 people were injured. The tension in Jerusalem has been mounting for weeks as Palestinians have been organizing to block Israel from forcibly evicting dozens of Palestinians in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood of Jerusalem to give their homes to Jewish settlers. After headlines, we'll go to Gaza and Jerusalem for the latest. India reported another 330,000 coronavirus cases Tuesday and nearly 4,000 additional deaths, though the true tolls are likely far higher. In northern India, dozens of bodies of COVID-19 victims have washed